Good morning. How's everybody doing? Good. Cool. Well, I'm just going to kick off with a couple of stories. And this first one is an old story, like from way back, 1860, old story. It's about an 8-year-old boy named George Patton. And George Patton's dad was a journalist. They live in Illinois, and his dad took him on a little journalism field trip, and it was to the inauguration of the new president in 1860. Little George met the new president, came home, went to his classroom, and told all of his little classmate friends, "I met the new president." And they all said, "George, you're a liar." And they started bullying him and tormenting him and teasing him, and they were relentless. And the teacher watched this go on for weeks and weeks and finally decided to actually write a letter to the president asking if he actually had met George so she could settle the bullying issue in the classroom. 2 weeks later, little George Patton received a handwritten letter in the mail saying this, "To whom it may concern, I did see and talk with Master George Evans Patton last May at Springfield, Illinois. Respectfully, Abraham Lincoln." I love that. Now, it wasn't like Mr. President didn't have other things to do. And he was getting letters from Queen Victoria, from military generals, from newspaper editors, and the freaking Civil War was about to start. But yet, the president, in all of his power and position and authority, looked into the life of a little 8-year-old boy who was in turmoil and pain, and entered his life and wrote a kind but sweet little note and brought him relief. I love that. And that little letter actually just sold for $60,000. So if you were hoping to snag that, I hope you saved your pennies. And in a similar story, fast forward not too long ago in 2000, two college girls named Sarah George and her friend Megan Freeman went on a 5-hour hike in Idaho Falls, Wyoming. And it was this long hike into the mountains. And as they reached the summit, Sarah became so sick with dehydration and altitude sickness that she basically couldn't move anymore. Another hiker came along, called 911 for them, and not long after, this helicopter swooped in, loaded up Sarah, and lifted off. And as they're flying to the hospital, Sarah's sick body starts reacting. She pukes all over the helicopter, and the onboard medic says, "Do you know who's flying this thing?" And she's like, "No." And he's like, "Harrison Ford." Harrison Ford, the guy Han Solo from Star Wars. Do you remember him? So Harrison Ford has his own helicopter and his own flying skills, and he actually volunteers for the local police department, saves them $1,500 a pop, and goes and does rescue missions for lost hikers, I guess. And Sarah's last comment was, "I can't believe I barfed in Harrison Ford's helicopter." I would probably feel the same way. So from Lincoln to Harrison Ford, these stories are fascinating. We love this kind of stuff, people of position and power and some sort of fame who step out of their sort of beautiful, glitzy life and enter into the ordinary struggles of us. And that's exactly, actually, what we've been getting at with this building block series that we've been doing, this thing about loving our neighbors like Jesus asks and leads us to do. And the thing that we've been dialing up in this series is how Jesus was like Harrison Ford and Abraham Lincoln times a million trillion. Because he, God, came from this place of power and position and authority and left it and showed up with us. And he didn't just do it as like the famous guy in town, but he was humble and he served and he ate and drank and lived and interacted with us. And to widen that picture, Jesus didn't just have, you know, fame and glory and power, but he came from this place of rich, deep harmony. There was this fullness that he came from, and he left that and entered dysfunction. He entered our neighborhoods full of scandal and struggle and issues and the stuff that we live in. And we all know what that's like. And he responded. He responded really well to the dysfunction. I would say even better than Abraham Lincoln or Harrison Ford. And to give you a picture, because it's hard for us to understand, like, how great was that harmony? Where did he really come from? So I'm going to explain his roots, where Jesus came from. And we're so used to talking about our dysfunctional families that where Jesus came from, it blows my mind. And I'm not talking about Mary and Joseph or his little manger friends, the sheep and the donkey. I'm talking about the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We throw those three names around kind of like this mysterious tossed salad, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. I don't know, maybe one of them's got a beard and one of them lives on a cloud, I think. I think one has a throne. It's just, it's hard, it's mysterious. We can't quite picture how this works. And it truly is mysterious. And actually, the word we use to describe them is Trinity. And that word's not even in the Bible. But it's the word we use to try to describe this amazing one God who has three personalities that interact together, but is still one being. And the way that we actually piece together the Trinity and figure out how it interacts and who's doing what is that we look through the Bible and we see like little glimpses and pictures of the three of them interacting throughout the whole entire thing, the Father, the Son, the Spirit, just weaving and working together all throughout this Bible. And you can find just verse after verse of them doing and interacting and talking and working. I mean, things like the Father sending the Son to be born through the Spirit, or the Father working to create the world through the Son by the Spirit, or the Father sending the Spirit to dwell in us by the name of the Son. Just this weaving and interacting. And there's incredible teamwork between these three. And these three guys are efficient. They're a good team. But it's not just teamwork. In every instance of them working and accomplishing stuff together, there is this deeper motivation and energy. There's something feeding this three-way relationship between them. In John 1:18, it says that the Son was living from all eternity in the bosom of the Father. And bosom of the Father, that's a goofy little phrase. I mean, who uses the word bosom anymore besides my grandma? But that little statement that the Son is in the bosom of the Father is this ancient metaphor for the Son to be tucked in intimacy and love in his Father. That there was this closeness, this tenderness between him and the Father. And it goes on in John to say that Jesus the Son glorifies the Spirit. I just lost my spot. Or Jesus the Son describes the Spirit as living to glorify him, and in turn the Son glorifies the Father, and the Father the Son. Just this back and forth glorifying thing. And to glorify something or someone means to enjoy it or delight in it. And it doesn't just mean that they're useful to you, like you like them because they can get stuff done for you, but that their very presence you enjoy. That just being with them, just seeing who they are brings you joy. And glorifying also means to defer or to serve that person. So it's not taking their interests and putting them aside to make you happy, but putting aside your own interests to make them happy. And why? Because your greatest joy would be to see them enjoy. And that means that these three personalities, the Father, Son, and Spirit, are completely bent and consumed on this mutual usness, this thing of bowing down to the other, of saying, not me, you, all of me for you. I'll lay down myself for you, just over and over. It's almost like this domino thing of them just bowing and loving each other and adoring each other and just on and on and on, this ripple effect of the three. And it's why Jesus can say, love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind, because he's been doing it for all of eternity. Everything inside of him, for the Father, for the Spirit, back and forth, just loving each other, praising each other. It's even why we can sing things. That first song that we sang today, one of the pieces of the chorus was, not to us, but to you be the glory. And that's the Trinity teaching us how to love like them, because that's what they've been saying to each other for all of eternity, not us, you Father, you Spirit, you Son. It's amazing. It's mind-blowing. I mean, I could pee my pants about this, I think. You guys are probably watching it happen. No, I'm not peeing my pants. And as a side note, as we just get a glimpse, I mean, I feel like I've just tasted the corner of what this Trinity thing is. And I think we could think about this for the rest of our lives and not see the whole picture. But if you think about your relationship with Jesus, and if you aren't sensing any kind of love in your relationship with God, and you suspect he might be stingy and hard and cold and distant,
I would get that checked out. Because this Trinity is brimming with love and this deeper gushing energy and emotion. And that's something that we get to dial into and get to be a part of. So keep that on your mind. Okay. So Jesus leaves that harmony and he shows up here. And when's the last time you guys have walked into your break room or your living room or your classroom and you have seen the people in those rooms just bowing down to each other in this heart-exploding display of harmony, just giving their lunches away and rubbing backs? And we don't see that. We tend to see people labeling their tuna salad because they're afraid the lady next to them is going to steal it. Or you gossip or backstab, or your siblings are fighting, or our coworkers aren't talking to each other, or we're miffed, or whatever it is. Dysfunction tends to explode in those places instead. And Jesus observed the same stuff. Because it's everywhere. It's in our homes, it's in ourselves, and it's in our neighborhoods. And that's exactly the crux that we want to chew on today. Because Jesus did this. He modeled this life of coming from harmony and entering dysfunction and actually responding to it really well in a way that meant he loved them, just like we are called to love our neighbors. So we want to look at how we actually follow Jesus into this as we live in our lives surrounded by dysfunction. So before I move any more into this, I would just love to pray and invite that Jesus to come and be here with us and be the one moving and talking. So Jesus, would you come and would you fill up this room with your presence? And God, I ask that we would be following you. Would your presence speak personally to each of us? Would your words have weight? Would we sense things? Would we be challenged by you, Jesus? And would we love you more? Show us how to do this, God. Amen. So we're going to look at a specific dysfunctional story in the Bible. It's not one that we typically look at a lot, but it's this funny little picture of Jesus encountering a dysfunctional situation and how he responded to it. And it's in Matthew 20, 20 through 28. And I'm going to read the Message version, which will be up here. You guys can follow along or you can read a different version in these Bibles. So it goes like this. It was about that time that the mother of the Zebedee brothers came with her two sons and knelt before Jesus with a request. "What do you want?" Jesus asked. She said, "Give your word that these two sons of mine will be awarded the highest places of honor in your kingdom, one at your right hand, one at your left hand." And Jesus responded, "You have no idea what you're asking." And he said to James and John, "Are you capable of drinking the cup that I'm about to drink?" And they said, "Sure, why not?" And Jesus said, "Come to think of it, you are going to drink my cup. But as to awarding places of honor, that's not my business. My Father is taking care of that." When the 10 others heard about this, they lost their tempers, thoroughly disgusted with the two brothers. So Jesus got them together to settle things down. He said, "You've observed how godless rulers throw their weight around, how quickly a little power goes to their heads. It's not going to be that way with you. Whoever wants to be great must become a servant, and whoever wants to be first must among you must be your slave. That is what the Son of Man has done. He came to serve, not to be served, and then to give away his life in exchange for the many who are held hostage." So Jesus is hanging out with his disciple buddies, the ones that we hear about and read about a lot. And two of them, with their mom, come up. And these two guys, John and James, are brothers. And you might know John from his books, John, John 1, John 2, John 3, his really creative titles in the Bible. And they're coming up with their mom. And their mom, her name was probably Salome. She's been hanging out with Jesus too, so she's following him. And the thing about Salome is there's some speculation that she might have been Jesus' aunt, which means that John and James might have been his cousins. So they come up to Jesus asking for a personal favor. That sounds like a personal savior. Okay. Okay, a personal favor. And she tries sweet-talking Jesus into letting her sons have these positions of power and honor, one on his right side, one on his left side. And here's the thing that's kind of tricky, because we don't always catch in here. When she asked that they be part of his kingdom and these positions, she wasn't thinking of God's kingdom like we do, like this thing of God having his authority and his way in our lives, of breaking through and getting to do what he wants with us. She was thinking of the kingdom, and a lot of people then did, was of this political, physical power that was going to show up as like a revolution and overthrow the government so that Israel would be free and on top again. And so she's actually asking Jesus to pull some strings so her boys can be big shot government officials in the revolution, like in the Jesus regime. And she knows that there's 10 other guys who are in the running for this, the 10 other disciples. So she crams her foot in the door with the weight of family influence, right? Because she's Auntie Salome. And she asked Jesus, hey, nephew Jesus, you want to do this thing? Because it would be really great for my boys. I'd feel really great about it. We'd look really good. Can you do this? And that little trick we call nepotism is actually reeking of entitlement and pride and control and a meddling mother. It's not so pure and harmonious. And we got that stuff going all around our world, don't we? This oozy, broken dysfunction in our conversations, in our workplaces, in our neighborhoods. And to dig up a few scenarios for you, I mean, it can look like that family member who years ago in that business deal you felt ripped off from, and years later you're not talking because they won't admit that they owe you money. Or the neighbors next to you who are screaming and yelling all hours of the night, and you maybe hear them through your apartment walls, or you can hear them across your lawn. Or maybe it's the coworker who sucks up to your boss and takes credit for work they haven't even done. Or maybe it's the horrible wedding you went to last fall where your ex-wife was at and you publicly fought with her in front of the other guests. And this dysfunction, it oozes everywhere. And you guys can probably dial into little pieces of all those stories. Rage, manipulation, bitterness. It just brews in our lives. It's kind of inescapable. And I haven't been in a study group, in a family, or a neighborhood, or even a potluck clear of dysfunction. And I know, because at every potluck, there is that nasty salad with the rice and the whipped cream and the mandarin oranges. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Dysfunction at potlucks. Oh, if you really love that salad, that's great, but it's gross. Oh, geez. So, our first step in this, as we think about this dysfunction in our world and our cultures, is to pull off our blinders and come to grips that life isn't full of harmony, as much as we cross our fingers and hope so. And I would ask, are we recognizing the dysfunction? I just want you guys to think about your neighborhoods right now. Think about the homes around you, the families who live in them. Are you in tune with the struggles that they're going through? Do you know how dysfunction has let loose in your neighborhood? And if we don't know, I think that's a great place to start, because why aren't we paying attention? Why don't we know how our neighbors are doing? And if you do know, if you've had those conversations or you've taken the time to observe and watch, I would let that remain on top. Like, put a finger on that tab and don't let it drown out into the background. So we've got this dysfunction going on, and it's a messed up deal that we live in. Unfortunately, in the same way that this joy in serving perpetuates and grows in the Trinity, the more that they love each other, the more the love increases. Unfortunately, the typical way that we respond to dysfunction is with more dysfunction. And we tend to perpetuate the dysfunction around us as well. Notice the 10 other disciples and how they do this. They become outraged when they observe John and James and his mom trying to like rig this deal. And they basically are saying, are you kidding me? Can this be any more ridiculous? And their meddling mother, and who are we, chopped liver? We might not be related to you, Jesus, but we'd like some equal opportunity here. It says that they lost their temper, and they end up responding with jealousy, fear, and anger. And how does that translate to us when we respond to dysfunction? I actually decided to look online and see if the people of the internet world had any ideas for us of how do you respond to a dysfunctional neighbor. And the scary thing about this list is I think some of them have actually tried these things. And maybe some of them are your neighbors, so I would watch out. So, okay, take notes if you want to. These are really good ideas. Number one, go to a farm store and buy the dry form of coyote urine. Take the powder and dump it into their truck vents right by the windshield wipers, and when it rains, the nice strong odor of coyote pee will get in the truck and stay there. Good idea. Number two, get an adult friend to throw water balloons filled with dirt, egg, a worm or two, and poop. Be sure they have a mask on. Probably not a bad idea to put that mask on. Number three, write a nasty word in their lawn with grass killer spray. Number four, hire Megadeth. Do you guys know who Megadeth is? Yeah, to perform in your backyard late at night. Number five, send a religious organization to their door to save them. Bad. Number six, if you live in an apartment, cook lots of smelly things with the door open, especially cabbage. These are pretty good. Okay. So these are actual ideas that people have supposedly tried, or at least they thought they were good ideas. And in this way, dysfunction reigns on and on and on, because you can probably tell if you tried any of these, it wouldn't be a good idea. You would probably be in big trouble. And as a side note, the Vineyard Church does not endorse any of these ideas. Not at all. So John 1:14 says that Jesus doesn't respond with bags of poop and whatever else, coyote pee, but as a perfect balance of grace and truth. Grace and truth. We don't handle that balance very well, do we? Because we either swing on one side of the spectrum or the other. We either have this twisted version of truth, which ends up looking like retaliation, revenge, and anger. We respond, chomping back at them, blowing up, chewing them out, writing our rants on Facebook, putting nasty notes under their windshield wipers. We just kind of fight back, and we think, man, I'm going to respond with truth. I'm going to give them a piece of my mind. But truth without grace ends up crushing people, and it stirs hardness. Or we respond with a twisted grace without any truth, which ends up looking like us saying things like, oh, everyone's got their stuff. It's okay. They're going to be okay. Or this isn't my business, or I'll stay out of it. And we isolate ourselves from the problem, and we pull our shades down, and we pretend we don't hear the fighting, and we walk by, and we don't meet eye contact, or we just talk about the nice things in life, and we never actually get to the hard stuff. And we hide because we're afraid we're going to offend them, or we're going to say the wrong thing, or they won't like us if we confront the thing that's going on. Or we've gotten so used to the dysfunction that we think it's okay. It's normal life. Grace without truth is fluff. It doesn't go anywhere. Which way do you lean in this? Because I think each of us tend to sway on one side or the other. Do you tend to hard hit the dysfunction around you? Does anger well up in you and you just kind of bite back? Or do you hold back and never actually talk about the real thing? And for me, I have swung on both sides of it. And when I swing on the side of just this twisted truth, what happens is a wedge gets put in the relationship and the friendship starts to sort of, dismantle. And when I swing on the side of just this grace, nothing changes. Because I'm not speaking anything real into them. I'm just dancing around the problem. But Jesus comes and he responds differently because he's wired differently. And he doesn't just blast people with punishment and disappointment. And he also doesn't lose people in this fluffy indifference either. But basically, he's this perfect balance of grace and truth, and he lives out what he's always known for eternity in the Trinity, and that's that the best way to love someone is to lay your life down for them. So that's what he's known. He's about laying his life down. And Jesus responds to the two brothers and their mom as they try to finagle him into giving him this special treatment. And he basically says, you've got it wrong. Following me isn't just an opportunity to get your way. And he meets them with the challenge of the Trinity and he asks, can you drink this cup? Meaning, I am going to give my whole life so people can be connected with harmony again. In fact, I'm going to die for this, which he does, which we all know about. And he says the full picture is to live sacrificially and to love others like I'm loving them. Will you do that instead of getting your own way? And then Jesus responds to the dysfunction of the 10 who are jealous and angry. And he says, you guys have it wrong too. You don't have to worry about power or hierarchy. You don't have to worry about losing out. I'm leading you in a different way. Don't grasp at power like the rest of the world does. Give your entitlement and self-protection away. The way to become anything great is to pour your life out and become a slave. And this flies in the face of our graceless, truthless ways that we try to love our neighbors. Because if we have the grace, that means we actually have to go in and love them and serve them and listen to them. And if we have truth, it means we can't be silent or avoid anymore. We actually have to speak wisdom into their lives. So we don't get to use our relationship with Jesus to our own advantage. We don't get to consume the perks of Jesus. We get to give it away. We don't get to lord over people's stuff. We don't get to fix our neighbors. We get to serve them sacrificially like a slave. And if we're loving our neighbors like Jesus does, that means it should cost us something. And what I picture that looking like is, first, as we get to know our neighbors, like past just their names on a little card or how many kids they have or where they work, we actually start having real conversation with them and finding out, man, what are they struggling with? What is really happening in their lives? And when the things start coming out, when they start explaining that they're fighting cancer or they just lost their job or whatever the thing is, their son or daughter is struggling in school, we don't then leave the conversation, run away because we're afraid to listen or because we've got stuff to do at home, but we wait and we listen. And we actually get to know what's happening in our neighbors' lives. And then, with Jesus' presence living inside of us, this Jesus who bows down, who gives his life, who has tons to give away, with him inside of us, we dial in with him and we say, Jesus, if you had your way right now with this person, if you had your chance to do something right now, what would you do? How would you respond to their struggle? And this is where it's going to start costing us. Because in all of the different struggles and dysfunction in our neighborhoods, this is where the life of Jesus comes and says, now lay down your life for them. Give away. And it might be something like, the need may be that you get to know your neighbor and you find out that their house is falling apart. And so you give up a whole weekend maybe, and maybe even some vacation days to help them re-roof the thing. Or maybe it may mean opening up your family holiday and inviting your neighbors over who have nowhere else to go and who don't belong. And it's not just your family anymore, your comfortable little holiday, but man, you're bringing in people who might be awkward, it might be uncomfortable. It may mean postponing your vacation because you find out your neighbors are in crisis and they need the money more than you need the vacation. It may mean sitting for hours listening to your neighbor grieve about a death of a loved one or a disease that they're struggling or going through and not leaving or not capping off your emotion, but actually entering the grief with them and crying and loving them in the middle of it. And it may mean giving up that parking spot that you've been fighting over with your neighbor and coming to them and saying, I am sorry that I've made this difficult with you. You park there, I'll walk the extra block. And the point is, it should cost us something. If we are just doing the easy thing, the nice thing, and it feels like a pat on our own back, it's not using enough. There's not enough of Jesus that we're depending on for this. And then when our neighbors start asking us why we're giving our money, our resources, our time, why we're offering ourselves in this way to them, we tell them the truth and we say, I follow Jesus. And then you don't just muscle through and you know, eke out whatever energy you can so that you can re-roof the house or sit and listen until you can finally get back home and get on with your life. At that point, then we get to lean into Jesus, the one who lays down his life and puts his life inside of us and allows his harmony to come out of us straight into the dysfunction, into the world around us. The power of Jesus coming out of our very own lives. And only Jesus can lead us into this place because he's indeed done it. He gave up the privilege of living in this divine harmony. And it cost him everything. It cost his very life as he entered into our dysfunction. And it's where he came from. It's what he knows. It's how he knows how to do life, to make it about the other. And so we then get to move out of our harmony with him and enter the dysfunction of the world around us. Why don't you guys stand up with me? So we never want to just talk about this stuff and think of good ideas, but we really believe that God's presence, and man, you might be feeling and hearing things from him already, but that he wants to do things with us, put things inside of us, speak to us, challenge. And so we always create time at the end of talking to do that. And we just invite his presence to come so we can personally interact with him. So I'm just going to invite God's presence to come. And as you're just sensing things, we'll have a prayer ministry team up here. Actually, if you guys could come up even right now, we're just going to help each other meet Jesus in this and pray for each other and point each other to Jesus. I'm just going to start by inviting him to come close. So Father, would you come and fill this place even more? And Jesus, would you let us just be soft to you? And all of the places that we have responded to dysfunction that we know is wrong, God, we want to be like you. We want to respond like you, Jesus. So would you help us actually be soft enough to surrender to you, to lay down our lives so that your life can come live into us. And so Jesus, we just welcome you. And as you guys are just interacting with his presence and letting Jesus just be close to you, I feel like there's a few things that maybe some of us would love prayer for. And one is, maybe you feel so disconnected from the dysfunction in your neighborhoods. You just don't want to go there. But you know that Jesus is calling you to love them and be in this. We would love to pray that God would actually deposit things in you so that you could care about your neighbors. And it wouldn't be just biting and trying really hard, but that Jesus would deposit his compassion and his love. And secondly, I felt like, too, that thing of the Trinity. If it felt like, man, my relationship with Jesus is pretty stale or it's not full of this juicy love, that's not anything that we can force or pretend either. And really, it's just this opening up to his presence, to this force of God who loves and moves. And we would love to pray for you and invite Jesus to just begin putting his love in you and letting you experience that amazing dynamic of him. And then lastly, because Jesus just cares about dysfunction and loves coming into the middle of it to bring his life, I just felt like there were three really specific things that are happening in a few people in this room that he just wants to come and enter your personal dysfunction and bring help. One is, I felt like there's a person here who has a severe food allergy, and I felt like specifically dairy, and it's bringing you a lot of discomfort and probably pain. I feel like Jesus would love to heal some things and bring peace into your body. Secondly, I felt like there were maybe a couple people who are dealing with some insomnia, but not just insomnia, but you have a lot of fear at night. Maybe even when you do fall asleep, you have sort of night terrors, and when you're awake at night, you're feeling really anxious. Jesus wants to bring peace to your sleep and just to the nighttime for you. And lastly, this is kind of a weird picture, and I feel a little bit awkward saying this, but I felt like there's somebody who is in a bit of a relationship snafu, and you're a little bit older, and I don't think you're married, but you feel really lonely in the relationship you're in. And this is a goofy detail, but I felt like you ride motorcycles. And I just saw like a picture of someone with leather standing by a motorcycle and being lonely, even though you had a person next to you. And I feel like Jesus wants to speak to that and give you his thoughts and his heart. So if any of those things make sense for you, if really any of this, and if you want prayer for anything, we're just here to connect each other to Jesus, and we'd love to pray for you and just keep worshiping together. Thank you.